The man from the Foreign Office had watery blue eyes and rather yellow teeth. When Martin Beck was ushered into his office, he sprang out of his chair to shake hands.
Splendid. Splendid of you to come. We're ever so grateful, honestly.
Martin Beck had just returned from holiday.
A holiday which had been cut short.
Very short.
In fact, he'd barely been gone 24 hours.
He'd left behind a cottage on a small island, a rowing boat tied to a tiny jetty, two children and a despairing wife.
My name's Martin.
So's mine.
Really? Huh.
Perhaps that complicates things.
Do you think so? No, you're joking. Right. Yes. Have you ever heard of a journalist called Alf Mattson?
Mattson.
Alf Mattson?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, well, that's no surprise. Anyway, the truth of the matter is that he's gone and disappeared on a trip to Hungary. Budapest, to be precise.
When?
10 days ago.
10 days isn't a very long time.
But in this case, it's more than enough.
Go on.
Alf Mattson flew to Budapest on the 22nd of July. He was sent there by his magazine. On the following Monday, he was due to call his office here in Stockholm.
But he didn't call.
That's right. Then on Tuesday, we had a visit from Mattson's boss, his editor. And, well, basically, they want to write a story about him.
They want to write about their own missing journalist.
Precisely.
Are they conducting an investigation?
The editor had a copy, an actual copy of the article, which he intends to publish.
What did it say?
A potential disaster, quite frankly. If the case gets reported in the press, well, it would seriously damage, perhaps even destroy, important bridges.
Bridges?
You know, relations. Us and the Iron Curtain and all that. Though, officially, we don't call it that.
Right.
He issued an ultimatum.
The editor issued an ultimatum to you.
If Mattson hasn't turned up by the end of next week, he's going to publish anyway.
How exactly do I fit into this picture?
Well, quite unofficially, we contacted the police and someone seems to have recommended you. So now it's largely a matter of whether you will take the case on.
So it's like that.
I'm afraid so. The fact that you're here at all indicates that you can probably be released from your other duties.
Yes, I probably can.
Martin thought wistfully about his fishing nets and the rowing boat.
Can I let you know this afternoon?
Of course.
All right.
Well, goodbye, Martin.
Goodbye, Martin.
Ah, yes. Martin. Martin.
Yes?
What we absolutely don't want is another Wallenberg affair.
The Wallenberg affair was, of course...
Of course.
...the famous case of the Swedish man last seen in Budapest in 1945, apparently...
Although no one knows for certain...
...apparently spirited away by communists.
Of course, it wasn't 1945 now.
It was 1966.
Not that anything had improved much in the intervening years.
What the hell are you doing here?
Hello, Colbert.
You're supposed to be on holiday.
I know.
What's that?
A security report on Alf Mattson.
Who's Alf Mattson?
A journalist. He's gone missing in Budapest, Hungary.
I know where Budapest is.
Foreign Office want me to go and find him.
You gonna go?
I don't know.
Can I have a look?
Yeah.
Colbert picked up a page very delicately between the tips of his fingers and placed it in front of him. When Martin looked questioningly at him, he shrugged.
I sweat so much, I don't want to mess up important secret documents.
Martin nodded. He himself never sweated, except when he had a cold.
Apparently he travelled all the time to the Eastern Bloc, Warsaw, Prague, Budapest, Sofia, Bucharest, Constanta, Belgrade. Looked to someone like he travelled too often. His boss says Mattson was their expert on Eastern European affairs.
His ex-wife says he was all right, but a bastard when he got drunk. How's your Hungarian?
Well, most people speak some German, English or German.
Uh-huh. How's your German?
Lousy.
How's your English?
The same.
According to Alf Mattson's ex-wife...
The one who said he was all right but a bastard when he got drunk...
He spent a great deal of time drinking in the tankard with his fellow journalists. Only one man was named in the security report. Someone called Molin.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Could I get a cheese sandwich?
Sure. Anything to drink?
A cup of tea, please.
Okay.
I just wondered if a man called Mr. Moline is here today.
He's sitting over there, the one with the beard.
They've all got beards.
Well, he's the one nearest the window.
The man named Mr. Moline ordered another beer. Martin Beck drank his tea, ate his cheese sandwich and smoked three Florida cigarettes. The place began to empty. Finally, the man got up from his place at the window and walked towards the exit.
Mr. Moline?
What? Do I know him?
No, not yet. Perhaps you'd like to have a beer with me. There's something I'd like to ask you.
Martin himself could hear that it sounded like police business from a mile off, but Moline sat down anyhow.
Oi.
What?
Give me another beer, will you?
Sure. What about you?
Yes. Yeah, I'll have a beer too.
Okay.
So, what is it?
It's Alf Mattson.
Oh, Christ, what's he done now?
Well...
Does he, owe you money?
No, nothing like
there
that.
There you are.
Thank you. He's an old friend of mine, colleague. He promised to write something for me a few weeks ago, and then I didn't hear from him. I knew he drank in here with you. He talked about you. I thought perhaps you might know where he was.
Martin Beck felt completely unconvinced by his own story.
Should be back from Hungary.
What was he doing in Hungary?
Subbing for the magazine, I don't know what.
You see him before he left?
The night before we came here.
Well, just you and him?
Yeah, me, him and Gunnarsson. Do you know Gunnarsson?
I don't think so.
He's sitting over there, look, the guy with the beard.
Moline gestured to the spot where he'd been sitting before. There was only one man left at the table, so there was no doubt which one was Gunnarsson. The man looked quite pleasant.
I don't think I know him. Where does he work?
Autospiel.
Autospiel?
Car maintenance magazine.
Ah.
We were all pretty drunk that night.
And you haven't seen Alf since?
You're asking a hell of a lot of questions.
Am I? Sorry.
Oh, Christ, I've got a goddamn awful hangover.
When Martin Beck returned to his office, he smoked another Florida cigarette and then made two phone calls. The first was to the red-haired man at the Foreign Office. The second was to his wife, Inger.
Why now? Why in the middle of our holiday? Not even the middle, in fact. Right at the beginning.
Because something's happened.
Something's happened?
Yeah.
What? What exactly?
Well, I can't tell you that. It's a bit, hush, hush.
Really? Hush, hush? What the hell does that mean?
It means I can't tell you any more. I'd like to, but I'm not at liberty to say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what I don't understand, the thing I really don't understand, is why it has to be you. Why they can't send somebody else.
There isn't anyone else.
You mean there isn't anyone else, or there isn't anyone else stupid enough to say yes?
Hopefully, I won't be long. Hopefully, I'll just be a couple of days. I mean, there's probably not actually a great deal to do.
Well, if there's not a great deal to do, why do you have to bloody well go at all?
Because it's my job.
Bloody policeman.
She hung up.
He did not attempt to call her back.
By late evening, he'd arrived at the Duna Hotel in Budapest,
where he ate a very good fish soup with paprika sauce,
and then went to sleep in room 105.
In the morning, a man from the Swedish embassy was coming to meet him at the hotel.
The only thing we know for certain is that Alf Mattson came through the airport here on the evening of the 22nd. He spent the night at a youth hostel, and the next morning he moved in here. About half an hour later, he went out and took his room key with him. Since then, no one has seen him.
And what do the police say?
Well, the police aren't at all worried, and won't be unless he overstays his visa.
Couldn't he have left the country already?
I doubt it. Where could he go without a passport? We've made some inquiries in Prague, Belgrade, Bucharest, Vienna, even Moscow, but nothing's turned up.
Is his luggage still in his hotel room?
Well, it's still at the hotel. It's not still in his room.
What about his passport?
I have it here.
Can I take it?
Of course. You just need to sign for it. Hold on a second. By the way...
Yes?
You're staying in the same room as Matson.
105.
That's right.
The porter was a somewhat stout, elderly man. Friendly, dignified, and admirably intelligible.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Is this a spare key?
Sorry?
This is a spare key, isn't it?
No. Why would it be a spare?
Well, I thought that the previous guest took the key with him.
Yes, that's right. But then we got the key back the next day.
Got it back from who?
From the police.
From police? Which police?
From the ordinary police. Who else? Mr. Matson must have dropped it somewhere.
Where?
I'm afraid I don't know, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you, anyway.
Not at all, sir.
Could I take a look at Mr. Matson's luggage?
Certainly, sir.
The porter led Martin Beck into a room behind reception where he found a portable Erica typewriter and a yellow suitcase with the key still in the lock.
The suitcase appeared to be neatly and carefully packed. Martin had the feeling that someone with a practiced hand had been through it and put everything back in its place.
Included in the contents was a dark blue plastic wallet. Inside was $1,500 in $20 bills, an astonishingly large sum for travelling money.
Martin returned to his room and lay down on the bed. It creaked magnificently. Had it creaked beneath Alf Matson? Presumably. Was there anybody who didn't test the bed as soon as he arrived in a hotel room?
Yeah, I'm trying to find a youth hostel called If Je Sag.
If Je Sag.
Yeah, it's on the Buddha side.
You're on the Buddha side?
Here. I'm looking for this place.
Oh, If You Shark.
Well, isn't that what I said?
Please, get it.
There was no immediate response to the bell. He sat down in the foyer and lit his last Florida cigarette. He could not remember ever being given such a hopeless, meaningless assignment.
Hello? Can I help you?
Yeah, I'm making inquiries about a guest who stayed at this hotel on the night of July 22nd.
And what was the name?
Alf Matson.
Alf Matson?
Hmm. Have you any idea who was on duty that night?
I don't remember off the top of my head. Wait a minute, I'll have a look. Here it is. The rota. It was a Friday. The girl on duty that night... She doesn't work here anymore.
Oh.
Sorry.
Do you have a guest register?
Sure. Hang on a sec. Oh. Here it is. Alf Matson. He stayed here for one night, the 22nd of July, just like you said.
Hmm. And he didn't stay here again any time after that?
No. No, but he did stay here for a few days at the end of May.
Who was on duty then?
Me? This is my writing. What does he look like?
Well, here's his passport.
Oh, I recognise him.
Do you?
Yes. Yes, because he was alone in a room with three beds... And then we had these three Russians arrive, so I needed the room, and I had to move him. But he wasn't happy because his new room didn't have a phone. He made such a big fuss, I had to ask someone else to swap.
Do you remember if he had any visitors?
No, I don't think he did.
Did he receive a lot of phone calls?
Yeah, a woman. A girl called him several times.
Do you remember anything else about him?
He had a typewriter.
Okay, well, thank you. Can I buy a packet of cigarettes?
Of course, but I've only got Turves.
Ah, that's fine.
Here we are.
Thanks. Thank you. And if you think of anything else, perhaps you could call me. I'm staying at the Duna Hotel.
Oh, sorry, there is one thing.
What?
He asked me how to get to an address in Budapest. I drew a map for him. I remember because it's the same street where my aunt lives.
Would you mind writing it down?
Yeah, sure.
Martin Beck came out of the hotel holding a piece of paper. On the piece of paper the girl had written, Veneziana Uzza. He put it in his pocket and lit a turve.
Hello.
Hello, is there anybody there?
Colbert.
Oh, so you are there?
Where are you?
At the office. What do you think? It's 9:15. You still in bed?
What's the weather like in Stockholm?
It's raining. Why the hell do you want to know that?
I don't know. I was just surprised to hear you.
Are you sick?
No.
And what's the matter with you?
I don't know. What do you want?
Alf Mattsson definitely isn't a nice guy.
Why'd you say that?
No one has anything good to say about him. He's often drunk, abusive, harasses women, picks fights with other men, is basically a complete arse.
Who have you been talking to?
I didn't have anything to do on Saturday, so I went to that restaurant.
The Tankard?
The Tankard, yep.
Officially, you've never heard of this case.
I know.
And you don't know that I'm in Budapest.
Do you think I'm a moron?
Occasionally.
I didn't talk to anyone, I just listened to those journalists. My God, they can drink.
Colbert.
What?
I'm going to try and get to the point.
I am trying to help you out of the goodness of my heart.
This phone call is costing the Swedish government a small fortune.
What do you care about the Swedish government?
Lennart.
Okay, so, remember the guy, Molin?
Yeah.
He thinks Mattsson's got a girl in Hungary, some kind of athlete, small-time, not famous. Met her when he was working as a sports reporter.
Doesn't sound likely. Female athletes are usually kept under lock and key.
I'm just telling you what Molin said.
Okay, well, thanks.
I haven't finished. He never said her name, but I think I might have worked it out. I managed to force my way into the Royal Library, and I sat all day yesterday going through back numbers. As far as I can make out, it can only be a girl called Ari Bock.
Ari Bock.
I'll spell it for you. A-R-I-B-O-K-K.
Is that it?
Yep.
After they had said goodbye, Martin Beck stared listlessly at the letters he had written down. Ari Bock. It didn't even look like the name of a human being. Probably the spelling was wrong and the information completely useless.
Would you like coffee or tea?
Do you know anybody by this name?
No, sir.
Is it a man's name or a woman's name?
Ori is a woman's name, short for Oranka.
May I borrow the telephone directory?
Certainly, sir.
Oh, and I'll have a coffee.
Thanks, sir.
At this moment, Martin Beck turned and saw a man staring at him. The man wore a navy suit and a black signet ring.
The directory, sir.
Thanks. Bock.
Naturally, there was no one called Bock, but he tried several other possibilities and found an Esther Burke, Veneziana Uzza, 6292173. He then took out the slip of paper from the girl at the youth hostel, Veneziana Uzza. It could hardly be a coincidence.
Oh, thanks. Excuse me.
Yes?
Where is this street?
The 4th district, in Urpest.
How do you get there?
It's quickest by taxi, of course. There's a nicer journey to take the boat.
The boat was called Utera and was a joy to the eye. A little coal-fired steamer with a tall, straight funnel and open decks.
Martin Beck stood on the deck and inwardly cursed the arrival of the combustion engine.
The heat came out like a column from the boiler room. The fireman was dressed in swimming trunks and his back was shiny with sweat. Martin wondered what the man was thinking about down there in that infernal heat.
In all probability, about the blessings of the combustion engine.
After the boat tied up in Urpest, the fireman came up on deck, laughed at the sun and leapt straight into the water.
Hooray! 5 minutes later, he was standing outside the building, Veneziana Uzza, number 6.
Frau Burke?
Yes? We're full up, I'm afraid.
I'm looking for a lady called Ori Burke.
Oh, it's my niece. One flight up. Second door to the right.
Thanks.
The door opened at once.
The girl looked surprised to see him. Most likely she was expecting someone else.
She was wearing a dark blue two-piece bathing suit. She might have been 22 or 23.
Fräulein Burke?
Yeah, that's me.
Sorry to bother you. I'm trying to locate a man called Alf Mattsson.
Who's that?
A Swedish journalist. He's from Stockholm.
Is he meant to be staying here? There's no one Swedish here right now.
Oh, he gave me this address.
Really?
Here. Oh, this is what he looks like. Do you recognise him?
No, I've never seen him before.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
Why are you looking for him?
He's a friend of mine. We were supposed to meet here.
In this house?
No, in Budapest.
I see.
At this moment, a blonde young man in swimming trunks appeared at the doorway.
Hey! I thought we were going swimming.
The blonde young man twanged the strap on her costume.
We are.
What are you doing?
This guy's just looking for his friend. Sorry, this is my boyfriend, Tets Rodeberger.
Who are you looking for? Alf Mattsson.
Alf Mattsson?
Never heard of him.
This is a photo.
No, don't recognise him either. Can we go now? Ori Burke, are you the swimmer?
I don't compete anymore.
Didn't you do some swimming in Sweden?
Only once. It was 2 years ago. It's so strange that he gave you my address.
Who?
This elf man had my address.
Well, don't worry about it. Go and enjoy your day.
Okay, well, sorry we couldn't help.
His return journey was not nearly so fine as his outward journey. This time he travelled on a modern ferry with a roof deck and a diesel engine. His fellow passengers included a tall man with dark wavy hair who was whittling listlessly at a stick.
His expedition had been a failure, and there was nothing to indicate that Ori Burke had been lying. Inwardly, he cursed the strange impulse that had made him take this pointless assignment.
The worst of it was that deep down within himself, he knew he'd not been guided by an impulse at all. It was just his policeman's soul, or whatever it might be called. It was the same instinct that made Colbert sacrifice his time off, a kind of occupational disease that forced him to take on all assignments and to try and solve them.
By the time he got back to the hotel, it was 4:15, and he had missed lunch.
In his room, he leaned out of the window and looked at the boats. Directly below him, at one of the outdoor tables, sat a passenger from his recent boat trip, the tall man with the dark wavy hair, still whittling a stick.
After dinner, Beck had his coffee and his brandy in the lobby.
On the other side of the room sat a man wearing a navy suit and a black signet ring. After a few minutes, the man got up from his chair and walked across the room.
23 years' experience had taught Martin Beck to recognise a policeman's walk.
May I sit down?
Yes.
This is my card.
Vilmos Schlucker.
Vilmos Schlucker. I'm a policeman.
So am I.
I realise that. Can you identify yourself?
Can you?
Yes. That's not actually valid identification here.
My passport's at the reception desk.
Why didn't you contact us?
Because I don't have an official assignment.
How long are you planning to stay?
My visa's good until the end of the month.
Slucker smiled for the first time during their conversation. The smile hardly came from the heart.
As far as I can see, your activities are more or less of a private nature. I assume that they will remain so.
You can always go on having me followed.
Excuse me, but what do you really think you're doing here?
What do you think I'm doing here?
I've no idea. As far as I can see, nothing has actually happened.
Someone has disappeared.
Says who?
I do.
In that case, you should go to the authorities and demand that the case be investigated. By the way, here is your passport.
Thank you.
It wasn't at the reception desk as you thought. You were mistaken.
Martin Beck found nothing amusing in the other man's behaviour and did not look up.
What do you think of the food here?
It's good.
I'm delighted to hear it. You see, nothing very dramatic or exciting happens here nowadays. It's not like your country or in London or New York. We've had our fill of all that. Now we want peace and quiet, and we take an interest in other things. Food, for instance. I myself had 4 slices of fat bacon and 2 fried eggs for breakfast. And for lunch I had fish soup and fried breaded carp. Apple strudel for dessert.
Uh-huh.
Have you been to the Palatine Baths?
No.
I'm planning to go there myself tomorrow. Perhaps we could go together.
Sure. Why not?
At about 11:30, the foyer and the dining room began to empty, and Martin Beck went up to his room. A paddle steamer slid by on the river, brightly illuminated with green, red and yellow lights.
A few people were sitting at the tables in front of the hotel. One of them a tall man in his 30s with dark wavy hair. The man had a glass of beer in front of him. He was no longer whittling a stick.
Martin Beck shut the window and lay in the dark, thinking. It was a long time before he fell asleep.
Hello.
It's me. How's things?
Ah, Colbert.
Did you find the Bond girl?
I did.
And?
She didn't even know him.
Oh, damn. Sorry.
Can you do me a favour?
Yeah, what is it?
Go back to the tankard.
Uh-huh.
Try and talk to those journalists. Find out what kind of people they are.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't think so. I don't think so. There's something fundamentally wrong with all this.
What do you mean?
I don't know. That's what's driving me mad. Something fundamentally wrong, and I don't know what it is.
The pool at the Palatine Baths was built like a labyrinth with walls that rose about 10 inches above ground level. The walls formed back supports for the moulded armchairs in which one sat with the water up to one's chin.
Inspector Zlucker began to wade between rows of seated people. He was still carrying his briefcase.
On the edge of the pool stood a tall man with dark, wavy hair. His swimming trunks were pale blue cotton and looked more like underwear. Perhaps someone should have warned him that they were all going swimming.
Yeah, will do, don't you think? Sure.
Zlucker sat back in his chair and closed his eyes.
Where did you find Alf Mattson's key?
It was lying on the steps of the police station. A patrolman found it there.
How did it get there?
I don't expect you to believe me, but the truth is I've no idea.
When was the key found?
On the 23rd of July.
Same day that Alf Mattson disappeared.
Indeed.
All this time, Zlucker had his eyes closed and looked perfectly relaxed.
The hair on his sunburned chest fluttered about like white seaweed.
What did you have for lunch today?
Fish soup followed by breaded carp, followed by wild strawberries with whipped cream and powdered sugar.
How was it?
Absolutely delicious.
Why are you having me followed?
I'm not. But I don't expect you to believe me about that either.
See that man standing over there in blue shorts?
Where?
Just there. No, he's gone.
I did make some inquiries about Alf Mattson.
Really?
Despite having no official request for an investigation.
Well, thank you.
Zlucker opened his briefcase, took out a towel and dried his hands.
According to the passport and customs authorities, no one by the name of Alf Mattson has left Hungary since the 22nd of July. No person who might have been Alf Mattson has been taken to a hospital or a morgue, and without his passport, Mattson cannot have been accepted at any other hotel in the country either.
And yet there's no reasonable explanation for his leaving the hotel and not letting anyone know where he is.
So long as he has a valid visa, I cannot, as I said, do anything more in the matter. Unfortunately, I have to go now. Stay. Stay. Enjoy the pool. I'm sure we'll meet again.
Well, thanks for...
Not at all.
Martin Beck watched Looker wading away with his briefcase. From his appearance, one would not think he ate 4 slices of fat bacon for breakfast.
For a while, he watched 2 deadly serious middle-aged men standing in the shallow end of the pool, tossing a red ball to each other. He felt lost and confused. He was none the wiser for his meeting with Schlucker.
Along the edge of the shore stood a row of benches where a few people were waiting for boats. Martin Beck noticed that on one of them sat the girl, Ori Burke. She was reading a German paperback. He thought of walking straight past her, but then he changed his mind.
Hello. Ori.
It's you.
Martin Beck.
How are you? Did you find your friend?
I'm afraid not.
After you called, I kept thinking, why did he give you my address? And how did he have my address?
I wish I knew, sorry.
That's all right. Do you want to sit down?
Oh, thanks. You've been swimming?
Of course. It's so warm, what else can you do? Are you waiting for the boat too?
Yes, well, we're probably going in different directions.
Have you been up to Gellert Hill to look at the view?
No.
Oh, you can see the whole city from there. It's wonderful.
Well, I must make sure I go.
Are you busy now?
No, not really, no.
We could go together if you like. I've nothing else to do and there might be a bit of a breeze up there.
Okay, let's do it.
The view from the Liberation Memorial lived up to Ori's promise.
What do you think?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Isn't it? There's the museum I work in. Over there? It's closed during the summer.
Oh, right.
Otherwise, I go to university.
What do you study?
European literature.
Really?
Yep.
She was standing very close to him, and he didn't know why.
Well, what should we do now?
We could talk about Alf Mattsson.
Him again. All right. Yeah, let's. Is he a very close friend?
No, not at all. I hardly know him, in fact.
He did not really know who she was and what he thought of her, and this irritated him above all else. At this stage, he was almost convinced that she was telling him the truth.
Would you like to have dinner with me?
Where?
At my hotel.
Well, can I go in these clothes?
I'm sure you can.
Very near the hotel, Beck caught sight of a man standing under a street lamp. He was tall, with dark, wavy hair. He was staring straight at them.
Did you see that man?
Yes.
Do you know who he is?
No. Do you?
Oh, he was staring at us.
He's gone now.
Quite a number of people were still in the dining room, and along the balustrade outside the open windows, swarms of insects were dancing around the lamps.
Little gnats. They don't sting. When they disappear, the summer's over. Did you know that?
We have them in Sweden.
Really?
Yes.
Where do you live? Do you live in Stockholm?
Yeah.
I liked it, Stockholm. Although it rained all the time.
No, does that a lot.
Does it depress you?
What?
The weather. The Swedish weather.
No, not really.
The food, as usual, was excellent, and so was the wine. After they'd eaten, they smoked with their coffee and drank a kind of cherry brandy liqueur, which also tasted of chocolate.
When she put out her cigarette in the ashtray, she brushed his right hand with her fingertips, as if by accident.
A little later, she repeated the manoeuvre.
How lovely.
What?
The music.
The music.
What did you think I meant?
I don't know.
Would you excuse me for a moment?
Of course.
While she was gone, he leaned over the table and looked in the nylon string bag she had brought with her. He unfolded the swimming costume and felt it. The material was completely dry, even in the seams and along the elastic. So dry it could hardly have been in contact with water during the past 24 hours.
I ought to be going home.
He thought about that intensely. In all its simplicity, the situation was somewhat complicated.
How will you get home? By boat?
No, the last one's gone. I'll get the tram. It's quicker anyway. Thank you for a lovely evening.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Then she stood on tiptoe and kissed him on the mouth.
You're very tall, aren't you?
Martin Beck was rinsing his face with cold water when there was a tap at the door.
Hi.
Hi.
I crept past everyone. No one saw me.
She pulled her dress off in one swift movement. She had nothing on underneath.
What are you doing?
Getting undressed.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
She moved towards him.
Please, don't.
What?
This video was uploaded to the channel Thinking Out Louder. Please like, comment and subscribe to the Thinking Out Louder channel. Thank you.
What's wrong?
I'd like you to leave.
Is it because of your wife?
My wife?
It's not like she'll ever know. I assumed you invited me to dinner because you liked me.
Sorry.
What are you sorry for?
I'll ask the porter to call you a taxi. Here.
What's that for?
The taxi.
Don't bother. Jesus! What a bloody waste of time!
An hour later, Martin Beck was still wide awake.
He decided to go for a walk.
On the street, a green Skoda started up and drove slowly and reluctantly around the corner.
He walked along the quay, past some sleeping boats, went by the statue of the Hungarian poet Petőfi, and then came up onto the bridge.
As he moved on a few yards, he heard his own footsteps give a faint echo somewhere.
He walked on a bit farther and again heard the echo. It seemed as if the sound could be heard a trifle too long. He stood listening for a long time.
Then he walked quickly on for about 20 yards and stopped suddenly. The sound came again, and this time he thought it came too late to truly be an echo. A tram from the Pest side came up onto the bridge.
A lone passenger was sleeping with his mouth open, leaning against one of the windows.
He waited in the sheltering darkness at the end of the bridge. Anyone following him across the bridge would be exposed, whereas he would be hidden. He lit a cigarette.
On the opposite side of the shore, the hotel was dark, except for two narrow rectangles of light, the windows of his own room.
On the other side of the street, a car came out of the shadows, a dark green Skoda. Someone stepped out of the car and onto the pavement.
Martin Beck had seen it often enough before. It was the tall man with dark wavy hair.
He sensed something then. Not a shadow, nor even a sound. Only a small movement in the air just behind him.
Martin Beck was a bad fighter, but his reflex actions were remarkable.
He ducked his head, put his right foot on the edge of the wall, twisted his body and threw himself backwards.
He fell hard on the quay, hitting his left shoulder on the stone paving.
On the wall above him, he saw two men silhouetted against the sky.
Then suddenly, one of them was on top of him, trying to attack him with a knife.
As they struggled, Martin Beck's last thought was this.
His only chance of survival was to tip himself and his attacker into the river.
He woke up to find that everything was bathed in a white light.
The white light turned out to be the headlights of Major Slucker's car.
Good evening.
Hello. Lie still. The ambulance will be here soon.
I don't need one. I'm fine.
You did well. Those men were rather dangerous.
Ah. Oh. That one over there, that's Tits Rudderbeger.
We know.
Where's the other one?
We shot him. Only in the leg, of course.
Martin Beck followed Schlucker into his office. It was very spacious, and the wall was covered with a large map of Budapest. It reminded him of his own office back in Stockholm.
How did you manage to be right there this evening?
It was what you said about being followed.
I'm sorry about that.
Don't be. People imagine so many things, but you're a policeman, and policemen seldom do. So we began to watch the man who was tailing you. This afternoon, our man saw that two men were watching you. He thought it looked peculiar, and he sounded the alarm. I'm going to speak to the tall one now.
The one you shot?
Yes, that one. Do you want to come along?
Yes, please.
Your name?
Theodore Froebel.
When were you born?
21st of April, 1936, in Hanover.
What is your occupation?
Travel guide.
Where do you live in Budapest?
A boarding house in Újpest, Veneziana Utca 6.
Earlier tonight, you and a man called Tetz Radeberger attacked this man here on Groza Petter Rockport. Do you know him?
Froebel glanced nervously at Martin Beck.
Martin Beck lit a cigarette.
No.
Have you seen him before?
No.
Do you know who he is?
No.
You don't know him, you've never seen him before, and yet you attacked him. Why?
We needed money.
Don't lie.
We thought he was someone else.
Who?
Someone who owed us money.
You know a Swedish man called Alf Mattsson?
No.
Mr. Radeberger says that you do.
I know him a bit.
When did you last see Alf Mattsson?
In May. I think it was May.
Where did you meet him?
Here, in Budapest.
3 days ago, this man was at your boarding house asking for Alf Mattsson. Since then, you have followed him and tried to kill him. Why?
We didn't want to kill him.
Your friend attacked him with a knife.
We were just trying to frighten him. Wasn't injured, was he?
We found $1,500, £830, and 10,000 marks in your room at the boarding house. Where did you get that money from?
I did extra jobs. I saved it up.
What sort of extra jobs?
Different things, you know, all kinds of things.
Is this what you're referring to? Smuggling and selling hashish. We found 15 packages like this one, hidden in the doors and seats of Radeberger's car. I want to hear the whole thing with all the facts you can remember, names, dates, and figures.
Froebel closed his eyes and fell sideways off the chair. Martin Beck saw him put his hand out before he actually fell.
He's faking.
I know.
Schlucker got up from his desk and poked Froebel with his shoe.
Get up, Froebel. Okay. Let's call it a night. We can start again in the morning.
Martin Beck switched on the overhead light and undressed. His head and left arm ached. He looked in the long mirror in the wardrobe. He had a large bruise above his right knee and his left shoulder was swollen and black and blue. He ran his hand over his head and felt a large bump at the back of it. He couldn't find any more injuries.
It was nearly 2 o'clock in the afternoon when he woke to the sound of the telephone ringing.
How are you feeling?
Not bad, thanks. How's it going?
Well, there's only one thing that's still not clear.
What's that?
The whereabouts of Alf Mattsson.
Oh, that.
They absolutely insist that they don't know where he is.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
Would you like to talk to Rada Berger?
I'd love to.
I'll send a car.
Tetz Rada Berger was dressed as he had been the previous night, in a snug pullover, thin Dacron trousers with elastic at the waist, and light rubber-soled cloth shoes. Dressed to kill, in fact.
Slucker had put a tape recorder on the desk. Martin Beck switched it on, with Rada Berger keeping a close watch on his movements.
When did you meet Alf Mattson for the first time? 2 years ago.
Where?
In Budapest. At a youth hostel.
How did you meet him?
Through Ori. She used to work there.
Had you already begun to smuggle drugs then?
Only a little. For our own use. But we didn't use it all that often. We never use it these days. It's not good for you.
Go on.
We offered some to Mattson and he wasn't interested. He prefers alcohol.
So how did Mattson get involved if he wasn't interested?
Well, he didn't want to smoke it himself, but then he heard how easy it was to get hold of.
Had you already thought about smuggling?
We had, but the problem was getting it into the countries which would really pay for it. Scandinavia, Holland, Germany.
So Mattson offered to be your middleman?
Yeah. He said that when you travel from Eastern Europe, no one was interested in your luggage, especially if you were flying. He had this idea that we could meet in all these different places that he needed to be for the magazine. It was a good cover.
Where is he now?
I don't know. Really, I don't know. We were supposed to meet on the 23rd, but he never turned up.
He was here in Budapest. He came on the 22nd in the evening. He left his hotel on the 23rd in the morning. Where were you going to meet?
At Ori's place. But he never turned up.
Did you kill him?
No. I keep telling you. Why should we do that? We made money off him. A lot of money. Would we stay on here 3 weeks with that whole supply hidden in the car if we'd killed him? We haven't killed anyone. We're not like that.
You tried to kill me last night.
That was different.
In what way?
It was our only chance.
Your only chance for what? What, to be hanged for murder? To get a life sentence?
When you turned up with Mattson's passport, we thought he must have sent you instead. But you didn't say anything and you didn't seem the type. And we didn't know who you were. And we were getting nervous. And after 3 weeks, we had to get our visas extended, so Theo followed you wherever you went and...
Go on.
Then you went out that night, and Theo followed you across the bridge, and I drove the car across the other bridge. Then we swapped over because Theo didn't dare do it. We didn't know you were police. Are you a policeman?
Yes. I'm a policeman. Are Mattson and Miss Burke good friends?
They slept together, if that's what you mean. We all slept with her. She's a nymphomaniac. I don't do it so much now. It's not really good for you to do it too much.
Did you and Mattson ever fall out?
I had to smack him once when he was pissed. He kept calling us Nazi bastards. All night long, Nazi this, Nazi that. He was drunk. But it was all right again in the morning.
Well, I think that will do for now.
That business last night...
When you tried to kill me.
Can you forgive me?
No. I can't.
In his hotel room, Martin Beck came to a decision and called the Swedish embassy.
Alf Mattson was a narcotics smuggler.
How very unpleasant.
The Hungarian police are looking for him. For our part, we'll put out a description through Interpol.
And what does this mean for you?
That I go home tomorrow, if it can be arranged.
I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Have a nice flight then, Mr. Beck. It's been very pleasant having you here.
Thank you.
Then he called Lennart Kohlberg.
Can you find out what Alf Mattsson did the night before he left?
Sure.
In detail. How he behaved, what he said, what he was wearing, well, particularly what he was wearing.
Okay. Do you need to know tonight?
Tomorrow will be fine.
Alf Mattsson's luggage was still standing in the room behind the reception desk. Martin Beck opened the man's suitcase and took its contents out. Then he took the cover off the typewriter, placed it on the table, inserted a piece of paper and started to type.
Grey and black check shirt, brown sports shirt, white cotton shirt, light beige gabardine trousers, one pair of brown suede shoes, three white handkerchiefs.
That evening, Martin Beck went into the dining room and ate a late dinner with an absent-minded expression on his face.
The waiter put a Swedish flag in front of him. He didn't seem to notice it.
On the morning of his departure, a car with flashing lights drove up to the Dunna Hotel to deliver a police report. Major Vilmos Slucker of the Hungarian police was an efficient man.
On the aeroplane, Martin Beck read Slucker's report again.
According to the porter at the youth hostel, Alf Mattsson was wearing light beige trousers, dark blue jacket, probably a white shirt and tie. A receptionist at the Hotel Dunna saw Mattsson. He was wearing steel-rimmed glasses, light beige trousers, a dark blue blazer, a white shirt and brown shoes.
Martin Beck took out the list he'd made of the contents of Alf Mattsson's suitcase and read through it. Then he underlined nine words.
Light beige gabardine trousers. One pair brown suede shoes.
Then he leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes. He did not sleep, but sat like this until the plane landed in Stockholm.
Martin Beck went straight from the airport to the police station.
In the canteen, he was drinking a cup of tea when he heard someone behind him saying...
Hello. excuse me for asking, but is this really a marzipan cupcake?
Well, what else could it be?
Some kind of cultural monument? Something from the official bakery museum?
If you don't like it, you'd have to eat it.
I order a cupcake and you give me a fossil that not even the Swedish State Railway would serve up without blushing. I am a very sensitive person.
Really?
A lousy cupcake can send me over the edge.
Lennart Kohlberg.
Martin Beck.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Do they have a crayfish season in Hungary?
I've got no idea.
It's been 5 days since the crayfish season opened here, and so far, you haven't consumed a single one.
That's correct.
Shall we go and eat?
The restaurant was crowded, but a corner table had been reserved for them and laid for a crayfish dinner.
There's something wrong with this Mattsson story.
Yes, I agree, but what is it?
It's aggravating.
It's even more aggravating that we can't stop thinking about it. If he's really disappeared, then it's no loss to anyone. By all accounts, he was a complete bastard. If he's on the run, then someone will get him one day. And if he's dead, then it's too late for anything to be done anyway.
Yeah.
Imagine if he just goes on having disappeared. Then we'll be thinking about it for the next 10 years. Christ.
Here we are, gentlemen.
Ah!
The crayfish were delicious. And the men didn't talk much while they ate.
Mm. Oh, my God. Mm.
Oh. What?
That was a fantastic dinner.
It was very good.
Unfortunately, I'm still hungry.
How can you still be hungry?
It's one of my talents. I'm going to order a steak. Do you want one?
No, thank you.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir?
Can I order a steak, please? Medium rare.
Very good, sir.
So... Mattsson.
Yeah.
There were two men with him at the tankard the night before he left, Molin and Gunnarsson. Gunnarsson writes about cars, drinks but never gets drunk, seems quite bright. Molin.
I've met him.
Says Mattsson is his best friend but slags him off constantly. So, Thursday, the 21st of July, at midday, Alf Mattsson had lunch with Molin. He drank a fair amount of beer. At 4, Orka Gunnarsson joined them at their table. At 9:30, they all moved on to the Royal Opera House bar. Only Mattsson and Gunnarsson stayed until the place closed, and they were both very drunk. Mattsson couldn't walk straight and was harassing several women.
Did you go and see Gunnarsson yourself?
Nope, I sent Stenstrom.
What did Stenstrom make of him?
Thought he seemed quite decent.
Do we know what he was up to Friday the 23rd of July?
We can find out. We could do it now, after I've eaten my steak, obviously.
That's fine. It can wait. Stenstrom can do it first thing tomorrow. Tell him to make it sound very routine.
Okay.
Did you find out what he was wearing?
Who?
Mattsson, what he was wearing on the 21st.
Yeah, grey suit, white shirt, black tie, black shoes and a light-coloured cotton coat.
So if he wasn't wearing the grey suit when he disappeared and it wasn't in the suitcase in Budapest, then it should be in his flat. Mm.
Saturday, the 13th of August, 1966, was grey and rainy.
In his office, Martin Beck made a phone call to Major Vilmos Slucker.
Would you be able to find out whether any foreigner reported the loss of his passport at the Irfushag or the Dunner Hotel since the 21st of July?
Of course. How urgent is it? I can get you an answer by 5.
Well, whenever you can.
OK, I'll call you back at 5.
Thank you.
The police station seemed unusually quiet, but of course it was Saturday, and despite everything, still summer.
Martin Beck rummaged in a drawer, found an old dry Florida, and lit it.
Combined with the lingering taste of crayfish and the bad cup of coffee, it tasted disgusting.
He began to feel quite nauseous.
He was just wondering whether he should take a walk in the rain when Lennart Kohlberg came into the office.
Apparently, Gunnarsson sat at home writing on Friday. On Saturday, he was at the office first thing in the morning and then last thing in the evening.
Can anyone verify that?
Someone saw him at the office in the evening, but no one saw him in the morning.
Right.
And I went to Alf Mattsson's flat. The grey suit wasn't there.
Right, okay.
So in Budapest, he was wearing beige trousers and brown shoes.
Yes, and a raincoat.
And in his suitcase, there was a pair of beige trousers.
Yeah.
And a pair of brown shoes.
Yes.
Why would he travel to Hungary dressed in beige trousers and brown shoes if he had exactly the same clothes packed in his bag? And the night before he left, he was wearing a grey suit and black shoes.
Yes, and a raincoat.
And neither the shoes nor the suit are in his flat.
No.
Christ.
Yes.
Shall we get a drink?
Why not?
Tankard?
Can we walk there?
It's chucking it down.
Well, it's not too bad now.
Why do you want to walk?
I don't feel well.
You never feel well.
That's true.
You need a holiday.
The telephone rang so precisely on the dot of 5 that it seemed almost unnatural. It was unnatural.
Hello?
Hello, Martin. Where's Lennart?
He's here.
Who is it?
It's your wife.
Hiya.
What are you doing?
I'll be home soon.
When?
I don't know exactly.
You're not going to work tomorrow as well, are you?
Tomorrow, I'm not sure.
It's the bloody weekend.
I'm sorry.
I'm sick of it, Lennart.
Sharp on me.
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
Well, it sort of is, actually.
Well, I'll tell her that later.
Ring her back.
Oh, it'll be okay. It'll be all right.
It probably would be all right. They'd only been married 6 months, and they loved each other very much.
10 minutes later, the phone rang again.
Hello, Martin.
Hello.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. It's more difficult to get hold of people on a Saturday, but you were right.
What about the passport?
A Belgian student lost his passport at the Hotel Irfushag.
When?
He came to the hotel on Friday the 22nd of July in the afternoon.
So it fits?
It fits.
Good. No.
The man's name is Ruder. This is his first visit to Hungary, and not knowing the regulations, he found it quite natural to hand in his passport and not get it back till he left the hotel. As he was staying there for 3 weeks, he didn't give the matter another thought until he needed it in order to get a visa for Bulgaria.
That sounds plausible enough.
At the hotel reception, they said they had left Ruda's passport in his pigeonhole on the Friday evening, and that consequently he should have received it back when he came down on Saturday morning.
Have you seen this man, Ruda?
Yes, he's still at the hotel.
Does it fit?
He had a beard. Otherwise they aren't especially alike, judging by their pictures. Anyway, someone has definitely left the country with Ruda's passport.
How do you know that?
Ruda's exit permit is in our files. It was handed in to the border police at Hegyar Sholom on the 23rd of July.
Right.
I suppose this means that Mattson has left Hungary.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No, because he never went there in the first place.
Because the journalist Orka Gunnarsson was the last person to see Alf Mattson on the Thursday night.
And because Orka Gunnarsson had no alibi for the Friday or the Saturday morning.
And because Orka Gunnarsson had a beard like Alf Mattson.
And because they were almost certain that Alf Mattson was dead.
Martin Beck and Lennart Colbert decided to pay him a visit.
The flat where Orka Gunnarsson lived had only two windows and appeared to consist of one room.
On the other side of the street was a field and a wooded slope.
In the middle of the field stood the charred remains of a burnt-out house.
Pull up a minute. You see that?
That's an old farm. I remember seeing it last summer, a fine old wooden house. I think the fire department set it alight, you know, to practice. They set it alight, then put the fire out, then they set it alight again, put it out again, and they go on like that till there's nothing left.
We need to go to Solna police station, ask them to rope off the house.
Yes, okay.
Yes, it's just a guess,
it's a good guess.
Let's go.
Once they'd driven to Solna police station, they were free to call on Orka Gunnarsson.
He was wearing a dressing gown and slippers, and he looked extremely surprised to see them.
Sorry, I thought you were my fiancé.
We're policemen. My name is Beck, and this is Inspector Colbert.
Hi. Hello. What's all this about?
It's about Alf Mattson.
Someone was here this morning.
Detective Stenstrom, we know.
Oh, right.
Can we come in a minute?
My fiancée, she should be here any minute now. We were supposed to be going out for dinner, actually.
This shouldn't take too long.
Sorry, of course. Come in.
As Beck and Colbert entered the flat, they underwent a change. It happened to both of them at the same time, and without either of them being aware of it.
All that had been tense, uncertain and vigilant about them vanished and was replaced by a routine calm, a mechanical determination, which showed that they knew what was going to happen and that they had been through the same thing before.
Please, sit down.
Thanks.
What can I do to help?
Tell us what happened on the eve of the 22nd of July when you and Mattson left the Opera House bar.
I did tell that other policeman.
We know. We'd like to hear it again.
Well, we said goodbye in the street and I took a taxi home. We weren't going in the same direction.
Can I have a look at your passport, please?
Sure.
Why have you got this written in here?
It's a limerick.
I can see.
It's about Winston Churchill. They say he wrote it himself. I heard it on the plane recently. I thought it was good, so I wrote it down.
Underneath the writing, the paper was a little lighter, and there were several small green dots that shouldn't have been there. They could have been perforations from a green stamp on the other side of the page, but no such stamp existed.
Having seen the passport, Martin Beck felt utterly certain. All the same, his idea about the burnt-out house might well prove to be wrong.
Hang on a minute, sorry, that's probably my girlfriend, fiancée.
Beside the telephone was a framed photo of a young woman. She had fair hair and very light-coloured eyes.
Hold on.
No makeup, but a silver chain around her neck, one which Martin Beck recognised.
It's for you.
Oh.
16 years ago, he'd given his wife the exact same kind.
Yes. Oh, that's fine. Well, that's good. We'll be there soon. Mm-hmm.
We have people searching through the remains of that burnt-out house in Hagerland.
Sorry, I'm just completely lost. What are you talking about?
Go and get dressed.
Gunnarsson returned from the bedroom dressed in a grey sweater and brown trousers. He was still unshakably calm.
Shall we go?
Not yet. Sit down.
Oh, sorry. Knackered.
What are we waiting for?
Martin Beck looked at him. He wondered what would happen if the man suddenly realized that the silence was just as much of a strain on them as it was on him. In some way, they were all in the same boat now.
20 minutes of silence passed. Martin Beck and Kohlberg looked at each other for the first time in practically half an hour.
You're right. It was me. What do you want to know?
What happened? There are witnesses who can identify you. We'll find the taxi driver who drove you here that night, and he'll remember whether you were alone or not. Your car and your flat will be examined, the burnt-out house across the field. Whatever happened to Alf Mattsson and wherever he went, we'll find him.
It is our duty to tell you that you are suspected of manslaughter, possibly even murder. You have the right to legal representation during a formal hearing.
He came here with me. In the taxi, he knew I had a bottle of whiskey at home and he insisted we had to finish it off.
And then?
We were already very drunk. We drank more. Then we fell out.
Why?
Photos.
Can you repeat that, please?
There are some photos in that drawer next to you. My fiancé with no clothes.
I'll put them back.
Thank you. He found them. Tried to steal one. I tried to get the photo back. He wouldn't give it to me. He said all these things about her. He was yelling. I was afraid he was going to wake the neighbours. It just escalated. Do I have to go into the details?
Just summarise.
Strangled him.
And after that?
He was lying there on the floor, dead, and I suddenly felt completely sober, which I suppose is impossible, that I was sober after drinking that much. Obviously, I should have called the police. It did occur to me.
And then?
Well, I sat there for a while, say 15 minutes or so. I think it was his glasses that gave me the idea. They had fallen off and were lying on the floor. They were rather striking. They changed his appearance somehow. And then there was that house. I had sat on the balcony watching how they set it on fire and then put the fire out again and again every Monday for weeks. I knew that he was going to Budapest. He had his passport and his tickets. He only had to go home and pick up his things. Well, I carried him down to the car. That was the hardest part of the whole thing, actually. I drove to the burnt-out house. I put him behind a loose wall under a mass of rubbish.
Go on.
It was starting to get light. I collected his things from his flat, and then I took his car and drove to the airport and parked it there. It was incredibly easy. I put the glasses on and I carried the coat because it was too small. I don't remember much about the actual trip.
How did you intend to go home again?
I just thought I'd work it out when I got to Budapest. At the youth hostel, I only had to look through 3 passports to find one that would do. It was Belgian, a man called Roger or something like that. It sounded like the name of some champagne. In the morning, Matson's passport, and I went to the other hotel. I didn't stay there longer than half an hour. I went to the train station after that, and I realised I'd still got my hotel key, so I threw it down outside the police station. I thought that was a good idea.
Not particularly.
I managed to take a fast train to Vienna. It only took me 4 hours. I took Alf's glasses off and rolled up the coat. At that point, I used the Belgian passport, and the officer barely looked at the photo. In Vienna, I took a taxi to the airport, and from there, caught an afternoon flight to Stockholm.
What did you do with Rhoda's passport?
Tore it up. Flushed the pieces down a toilet.
And his coat?
Hung it up on a hook at the train station cafe.
And by the evening, you were back.
I went straight to the office and handed in 2 articles. If none of this had happened, I'd be getting married this Sunday.
It was silent in the room until Martin Beck said,
"Did you try the bed?"
"Where?"
"At the Dunner Hotel."
"Yes. It creaked."
"I don't see why you should go on with this any longer. You know, since you're supposed to be on holiday."
"I won't make it there today."
"No.
You can just drop me off at Odengarten."
"I can take you home."
"Odengarten's fine."
"Okay."
When the 2 friends said goodbye, they didn't even shake hands. Martin Beck stood on the pavement watching the car drive away.
He thought of the fair-haired woman with the chain necklace and wondered if she'd stood for a long time ringing the bell without anyone coming to open the door.
Then he crossed the road to the nearest bar and ordered a whiskey.
He stayed in that bar for 4 hours. He didn't speak, but now and again pointed at his glass. The man in the white jacket didn't say anything either.
It was better that way.
In The Man Who Went Up in Smoke, by Mai Huerval and Pavel Lehr, Martin Beck was played by Stephen McIntosh and Lennart Colbert by Neil Pearson. Gunnarsson was played by Justin Salinger, Ori Burke by Georgia Groom, Slucker, Patrick Brennan, Fröber, Joe Sims, Inga Beck, Lucy Black, and Moline, Robert Blythe. The Foreign Office Man was played by Sam Alexander, The Embassy Man by Harry Livingston, Frau Burke, Christine Absalom, Steffi, Amaka Okafor, Radeberger, Don Gillet, and Gunn Colbert by Sally Orrock. The narrators were Leslie Sharp and Nicholas Gleaves. The Man Who Went Up in Smoke was translated from the Swedish by Joan Tate and dramatised for radio by Katie Hymns. The director was Mary Peat.